What's up, everybody? It's Marvin here in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia.
What's up, everybody? This is Michael in Boston, Massachusetts, for the first time.
Yo, what's good? This is Jesse reporting live from Oakland, California. And welcome to another edition of the Melanated Social Work Podcast. Josh is not available for the recording of this episode because he's getting stuff straight for his doctoral program. But if you want to support him on this journey, please make sure that you make a donation to his Venmo. That's at TB-SW. But let's get into the episode. We are greatly honored to have an amazing guest here with us. Today, we are fortunate enough to have Dr. Jennifer Mullen. Y'all, welcome Dr. Jennifer Mullen to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It is my pleasure. I'm to be here, and thanks for inviting me on. I appreciate all of you and the work that you all do and you bring as well.
Oh, that's such an honor. Michelle, we equally feel very privileged to have you on the podcast. But yeah, we usually just kind of check in with folks and see where everyone's at. So I don't know if you want to kick off the check-in, Jennifer. How are you feeling today?
I love that question. I ask that to everyone and people look at me. Sometimes when they're not ready for it, they're like, how am I feeling? And I'm like, yeah, how do you feel? How does your body feel? Where are you located? I'm going to give you a real answer. Let me see. I am feeling fucking relieved. because it's the first time in probably many years that I have not, well, that I've taken a month off, right? From meeting people, from doing workshops, from doing presentations. I'll still be working on structures of the work, of the business, you know, like all of that and onboarding people, but I'm not going to be like holding space for anyone other than myself. And the last time I had a whole month off to do that, I was severely burned out and I had to go on a leave, you know, because I couldn't function anymore. Yeah. So we can talk about that later. But so I know a lot about that. I know a lot about how this fuel will kill us. Yeah, I'm feeling relieved. I'm feeling like a little kid on vacation for the first time in a long time, if that makes sense. It's my birthday month. Shout out to Cancer Sun. Yes, yes. And I'm also feeling some anxiety and nervousness because I'm going to be moving in August and, you know, just some big shifts in my life. And back when in my 20s and early 30s, it was easy to do these things. But as I'm older now, I'm just feeling that. Like, I don't know, like, oh, you know, the roots and my ancestral team are like, are we going to be okay? Are we going to have enough money? Are we going to, you know, there's just all this what if.
Yeah.
In an already very uncertain world. So.
Yeah.
That's how I'm doing.
For sure. That's a lot of things. moving. Y'all were making me think of like me and my partner moved 5 years ago, which I'm hoping is our last move. I hope this is our forever home. But I just remember at that time, like we hired movers and I thought that was like the most baller shit to do. Cause like, you know, in my 20s, you didn't do that. Like I just called as many people as I could to move. But you know, people getting older, like I can't really ask people to do physical labor like that for me for like pizza. So, but yeah, I highly suggest people just hire movers. It's the dopest shit. They'll come pack your shit, take it for you. It's great.
Like a full adult,
right?
Yeah, I haven't done it yet, but I'm gonna do it this time. So thank
you. An adult flex for sure. What about the rest of y'all? How are y'all feeling today?
No doubt, I'm gonna pick up right there because I am in the process of moving, having just moved, and I'm totally on board with hiring movers anytime I relocate in the future. You know, in the 20s, it was always, if it doesn't fit in the car, it doesn't come with. And so did that. But now I'm building dressers. I'm building nightstands, bookshelves. My hands are beat up and I'm tired. But my partner and I got a pretty dope spot out here and I'm feeling good about it. So it's going to be our home for a little while. And just trying to feel settled, you know, I'm making it, curating the space and the aesthetic so it feels like home. And then once this is good, then going out and trying to meet folks in the community and build those relationships and be part of this this world out here, you know? So feeling as I take this breath during the wind down. I feel grounded. I feel grounded right now in this space with you all. So that's where I'm at.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
I'm feeling pretty peaceful today, actually. I had therapy yesterday and it was like a really, really, really good session. And so I'm just really reflective about just all the things that we talked about. There was a point, so it's extremely hot in Philadelphia right now, but it rained today and like the weather was perfect just to kind of just sit out on my porch and just like watch the rain. And so that was, you know, super calming. I had a couple sessions and I like, you know, like when you have sessions and you're just like, I did that shit today. That was all of my sessions today. I was just like, yes, I'm in rare form today. So feeling pretty peaceful and excited, you know, because you know, the melanated social work team will be at a destination next week.
Uh oh.
You know, we'll be at a destination all together for the first time in a long time.
Where are y'all going? Can I ask? Is it all right?
Yeah, we're going to New Orleans.
This episode's gonna air way after.
No one's gonna find us. Like this right. episode will be after. We'll be back home, so don't look for us.
No one will see the turn up.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. Thanks, Marvin.
Thank you for sharing.
Most stuff. I am feeling relaxed. My work, we had our like therapist retreat today, which was really, really nice. We went on a hike in Marin, and there were some beautiful views. And then we ended that at an oyster bar. Nice. Had a real fancy lunch. And my pup Baldwin came along and he made some puppy friends too. So that was really cute. Mm-hmm. So I was just enjoying being outdoors and I'm hella excited to be going on vacation, y'all. I have way too much PTO. I need to take time off. So I'm excited to just be like unplugged for a week to link up with y'all in NOLA. I like how everything just kind of came to fruition. I feel like we started planning this trip 2 weeks ago and it was like, okay, I know for sure we're going to have like at least me and my partner going. And now there's like 10 people that we're all about to link up in New Orleans. So it's going to be wild. Yeah, so it's going to be a vibe. So I'm excited for that. Hoping to take more trips this summer, y'all. I want to get about the country safely. So hopefully we can make that happen.
Turks and Caicos.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm down. Let's go somewhere on a beach. Mm-hmm. We're doing like food and culture this time. But, you know, next one, we got to be like on a white sandy beach for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a vibe. But yeah, Jennifer, did you want to just speak to, introduce yourself to the folks for folks that may not be familiar with your work, but maybe some of the work that you're doing right now?
Yeah. So I primarily hold space for other therapists, healers, space holders. I think that where I am now in the work, is really making sure that therapists are being inclusive of holistic to healers as well. Because mm-hmm. I think that, you hear me say often, therapy doesn't always equate healing. And that doesn't like sit well with me. You know, mm-hmm. I think that a lot of us came into this work to do some good healing work and to hold space for a lot of pain. And the way that treatment and the medical model continues to fall into that doesn't really, not just me, but a lot of us, right? Like doesn't fit with us, which is why we're here talking about this. So mm-hmm. I do a series It's called Politicizing Your Practice. And Jesse, I believe that's how we met. Then this series focuses on, it takes people through like kind of, I hope, you know, this journey from the history of colonization, historical trauma, what is intergenerational trauma, what is forced migration, you know, like how has migration affected a lot of us? And then it moves through structural oppression and mental health and looking at the mental health industrial complex just a bit. Because right, all of this can take hours and hours and hours, right? We get into like a, you know, bit of a surface bit of it. And then what might it look like for a certain organization or for folks to politicize their practice, right? Like, what would that look like? How is that possible? And really just starting that conversation and kind of shaking up a bit of the foundation so that orgs, groups, practices, schools can start to think about what that might look like and what our roles are in maintaining and dismantling structures that are still causing so much violence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so on top of that, of course, there's like webinars and podcasts and things of that nature and just building the structure and also working on the ground. I do a lot of work. I mean, been an organizer majority of my life before it was cool. When my parents were like, what are you doing? You need to focus on this and not on that. And getting arrested and what's happening. Mm-hmm. So whether I lived in the Bay Area, because that's where I went for my doctorate, or in the New York area. So I still keep my roots down. Like I still keep my roots in my hood and in Jersey City and in the surrounding area. I will be moving, but the purpose is to continue to make sure our people are well and the people mm-hmm. that are at and below the poverty level and unhoused, that they still receive access. And so I can't talk too much about like all the ways that I assist because of some of the other organizations. But what I will say is, you know, sometimes I'm doing therapy in people's houses with eight other people around, but it's not therapy, if you know what I mean. You know, and I'm sitting there because their son just got shot and killed. And you're just like, who the F are you? I'm like, hey, I'm here to just help you with this process. And so-and-so brought me in. You want to talk to me? No, but you can come in the kitchen with me while I cook. Okay, let's do that, right? Mm-hmm. So some of my work sometimes is just being there when called upon for the community. And I would say that that is my favorite thing to do, right? Because it comes from the heart and then I get to continue to build and not feel like I'm on this other level. That makes any sense? Like this untouchable level in some way. Mm-hmm. That was a long answer, wasn't it?
No, it was a beautiful answer. Yeah. I cannot speak highly enough of the Politicizing Your Practice series. Y'all did a phenomenal job. I felt like it was medicine for sure. And I appreciate just the level of honor that y'all gave to that and just taking time with it. I feel like so many of us find us in these trainings that are like our DEI initiatives, and they want you to like unpack racism in like 2 hours and then that's it, you're done. So I appreciate just the time and the space of meeting over a series of like 8 sessions to be in community with each other to process. It was a whole experience, so I highly suggest it. Y'all need to tap in with Dr. Jennifer Mullen. Cut the check.
And we have a pre-recorded series dropping actually Monday. So the first 3 of those workshops, it won't be as deep, right? But mm-hmm. it'll be pre-recorded. And so that's something we've been working on behind the scenes. And shout out to my partner in crime, Anissa. It's my homie, one of my best friends, my soul sister. And you know, Jesse, you've met Anissa.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Also another dope social worker. Right. As always, I feel like social workers and other like always doing work behind the scenes that nobody knows about. Mm-hmm. Right. So shout out to everybody out there listening to this that, you know, doesn't always feel seen. I just want to say thank you. What you do.
Yeah. Yep. So what was it that, you know, when you look back on your own experience, what was it that you feel like brought you to this work? What was the early roots of that?
Ooh, great question. I was always an angry kid. You maybe not see that now. You don't see that now. Maybe on my post you see it. I was acting out a lot of stuff that was happening in my family system growing up and in my community, and things that I saw that I shouldn't have seen, as I'm sure a lot of us can identify. And all I knew is that you know, I had this special connection. Also, this is where the spiritual part comes in, and my ancestral part. I would hear things and I would see things, and I got in trouble for it. And a lot, you know, even in school, I remember telling my kindergarten teacher, and this all relates, right? Like my kindergarten teacher, like I said something to her and I was like, I'm sorry, you're just getting mad at me because, and I was that annoying child. You're just getting mad at me because your husband is kissing that other woman. And it was true, right? Right? The scandal. And it was freaking true. She sent me to the principal. She was crying and I didn't know why she was crying. And then, you know, they're like, are you digging through her stuff? How would you know that? There was not cell phones, you know. I'm about to be 43. So like, yeah, cell phones, it wasn't a thing. But I think it started with like being brainwashed at a very young age. So like who I had to be, can't be a strong woman, femme. Like, you know, you can't be this person. You need to learn how to cook. You need to clean the whole house, even though your little brother's sitting right there and your father, you know, there was a lot of abuse in my house, but especially mentally and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And I think even through all of that, looking back now after beautiful therapy, right? Seeing, wait, a lot of that shit wasn't my fault, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I might've got hit or in trouble because I was calling things out that was unfair, mm-hmm. right? So I had a very young age, like things being fair and justice and equality in some way, shape or form bothered me. Like crying because my father didn't pull over and pick up a hitchhiker on the road, you know, like sobbing for an hour. Like I was a really sensitive kid. And I still am, but the world is hurting me, right? Yeah. You know, it's real. And so that's where I think it started. And then my rage continued in teen years. And you probably hear me talk about rage a lot because I have a very intimate relationship with my rage and my ancestral rage. And I understand that all of it is not mine. But that didn't happen until I went to the Bay Area. When I met Ruth King, well, my spiritual mother connected me to Ruth King, who wrote Healing Rage. And I don't know how I put together, like maybe I had like $200. I was a doctoral student, didn't have any money. Got fired my job for sexual, you know, there was like this whole situation. Right. And she was like, you can work for me for like a year and you can do this retreat. And it was a retreat in the Berkeley Hills. And y'all know how beautiful that might be. And for, I still felt like a kid, even though I was 26. I'm not where 26-year-olds are today. I'm not where 18-year-olds are today, right? Where they're like conscious and like, I can't wait to do this and that.
Right.
You know, they're just like smashing shit down and dismantling things. I was still in this like partying, like not that that's wrong. I'm just saying I just wanted to get my coins. You know, I wasn't conscious in that way. I wasn't conscious about a lot of things and that's okay, but I'm saying I wasn't. And I went to her retreat and it rocked me, you know, it rocked me to my core, where we got to embody it. You know, there were stations. She talks about that in her book as well, where there was a station safely and there were spotters and we were blindfolded. Hello. Hello. Right. And it was a whole weekend retreat. And in these stations, like mud and earth for crying and connecting with ancestors, beating the shit out of these bags on the floor, punching, screaming, spitting, holotrophic breathwork. I don't know if y'all are familiar a little bit with holotrophic breathwork, but Stan Groff, Ken Wilber, again, it was Cali, you know, Bay Area. And I went to CIIS. So, you know, very psycho-spiritual forms of like looking at your trauma in vitro. You know, looking at your birth trauma. So like the breath work kind of brings up this like heightened state and this heightened arousal. And at the same time, regulate your nervous system, which is really trippy and very healing, I have to add. And then another station to rip up all these bad contracts that you've agreed to, right? And then you're literally doing that for 2 hours. And I left that a changed person and realizing that this doctorate wasn't just about being a doctor and that it wasn't going to change and I was still going to get treated in certain ways, you know? So that was one big point in my life. And then another point was, you know, just like fighting in my doctoral program with my professors, you know, and just the more that I was working, whether Bayview's Hunters Point or Harlem or prisons, or I worked with juvenile offenders for many years and adults and, always work with trauma, like severe trauma. I worked at UMDNJ for 3 years. And so we were like first line responders and it was heavy Crip country. And what I will say is that changed me in ways too. So all of this work has built upon itself, like who I am today, my clients, the communities I've served have changed me mm-hmm. the same way that I hope that I have changed them in some way. But what I will say is seeing so much trauma and realizing that Black, brown, poor bodies are the ones that hit the brunt of it. And how deeply our families are hurting, and that sometimes caregivers and parents just don't have the words, don't have the capacity. And not that makes it okay. I don't want to excuse abuse, you know, but sometimes also that they're holding that intergenerational trauma that they're not aware of. So all of this helped me understand my parents' trauma. Again, not have to excuse everything, but have these aha moments. I was like, Oh shit. Okay. And then I would say the last thing is being at the university that I just recently left and being part of a peer education group and not realizing that we were decolonizing therapy, right? Like we were in group therapy. All of us were from the hood talking about heavy trauma. Here's this white gay man that is like asking us to talk about STIs and do presentations for grant money, you know, like, and it was building our self-concept, building our ability to speak to people, letting us know what we were good at and what we weren't. Like half of us were like, we're just going to go to community college, which is fine. And we didn't think we were going to graduate. I didn't think I was going to graduate college. You know, like I had to go to college in order to stay at my house. My mom was like, you're either going to do work full time and I want to see this much of the paycheck. Like my mom like that, like, you know, I don't want you out there acting up. Cause I was always like a step away from like another life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I share this. I sometimes share this with my clients, not all of this in this long, but I share this with my clients too, this so that they understand that we're all sometimes steps away, hairs away from another life, you know, that we can very easily be on the other side of those bars or what have you, you know, whatever it is. And so that peer education group saved my life, literally, figuratively, it saved my life. It taught me how to deal with conflict. We were doing, I guess, restorative justice circles before it was, or before I heard of it, before I read an article or anything about it. And this man became like a surrogate father and let us take out even some of our anger and rage in healthy ways towards him as a white man. Just like, you know, letting us process it, you know, in a healthy way. Yeah. And we got to go to the beach and be together, learn how to meditate. So literally in my first 2-3 years of college, I found like my crew and eventually went on to come back, leave California and facilitate it and do that while I was at the university for 12 years. And only since December have I left and moved on to do my own thing.
So nice.
That's where it's at.
I appreciate how you just, it seems like threaded all of these different points throughout your life and how it has built to this moment. I think it's a really beautiful view of things. And I think if we were to like follow that thread, it's probably just a continuation of all the work that has come before you and the ancestors that have been on that path as well.
Beautiful thought. I love that.
Yeah. One of the things that you named was your doctorate of psychology. From CIIS here in the Bay Area. You wrote your dissertation there, Slavery and the Intergenerational Transmission of Trauma in Inner City African-American Male Youth from the Cotton Fields to the Concrete Jungle. Powerful title. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What drew you to this focus for your work?
I was tired of, again, seeing the communities I was being dropped in to serve, right? Like, you know, as interns, we're usually dropped in into the areas that are most poor, the blackest, the poorest, or the most migrant, whatever, depending what state we're in, right? With very little experience. There were people next to me that were definitely, you know, growing up with trust funds, you know, they're just like, I'm intimidated. Could you not leave without me? And it's like, it's already 5 o'clock at night. And I'm just like, girl, like, okay. I'm changing out, putting my hat on, being myself, walking outside, you know, like put my bag on. She's just like, you know, and I just remember thinking, sitting in classes with these people, working with them, and I've done harm as well. I don't want to just make it sound like it's others or that it's just people that have come to be known as white, because prior to understanding, I think all of us have caused harm prior to having like an analysis. I just want to say that I'm not exempt. But this dissertation, man, was like, it was the bane of my existence, because A, I didn't feel like I deserved it, right? I felt like it was a fluke that I was even here. But B, I was fucking enraged. I was angry at all of this, like, conduct disorder, intermittent explosive, like yet another Black boy being diagnosed with a behavioral disorder. And I remember telling my supervisor, what the fuck is a behavioral disorder? Please help me understand. Mm-hmm. How is this not all trauma? And I didn't. And of course, we had to diagnose it. We have to, you know, like we did what we had to do. But slowly, I just started feeling this contempt. You know, and don't get me wrong, I love our fields, but I'm a critical lover of our fields, as I think many of us are, right? Mm-hmm. I love it and it can be better, you know? And I just kept saying that. I kept working with youth that when I let my guard down and I was just myself and I wasn't like fitting in this box that the schools trained me and then socialized me to be, and I was like, just call me Miss Jen, it's cool, please. Like, let's just do that. Sit back and talk about hip hop for 15 minutes, right? Like, they're going to try to tell me how like Jeezy is better than Biggie. And I'm like, no way. Look at Ready to Die album. Like, you know, like just being able to sit there and just like politic and be human and humanize them without trying to make like the right intervention, but rather reminding the youth, like, you got this. I'm just your mirror, bruh. I'm going to hold this until you can, right? Like, I'm going to hold this hope until you're willing to be like, I think I got this. And so I had a method, and so did some of my friends, and we got into a lot of trouble for not following a certain way. I feel like that's my life. And she got into a lot of trouble. and you know, we had a people of color group at CIIS. This is public knowledge because a lot of people know about this. It went down in history from what I hear. And I did not lead it. I just want to say that. I was one of the people, okay? I got feelings about it still. And, you know, the people wrote stuff that they did desecrated, and it was like discriminatory comments all over our flyer for people of color group. And it was for all people of color, all over, because it was not as many drama therapy, expressive arts, you know, all of us. And somebody wrote like, this is racist. Y'all are reverse racist. Why can't we just all be together? We are one. You're splitting us. So every time we put up a flyer, there was another. And every time it happened, it was a, like, we would get angry, but deep down, right, as I always say, the other side of that rage is that grief, right? And it was always that grief of not being able to just like, why can't you just let us live? Like, why, like, we just want to be together and talk about what we want to talk about without having to pass you Kleenex every other moment. Like, please just let us live. And it became a problem. And then a professor gave us an article from 1979 that he published. He was not a Black man, in the Journal of American Negro Education, about how Black fathers were not equipped. Right?
Oh, no.
Yes. And there was no context. Oh. No context. And so that became a big deal. And they barred me from doing my dissertation topic. And I fought it. And I went to the Board of Trustees and I fought it. And so that is a little bit of a crazy story. Sorry, I shouldn't use the word crazy. Intense story around my dissertation, because it holds it. It's dedicated to all the youth that I work with and my father, who I always struggled with, and my ex-partner, now ex. And for me, it was a labor of love of bringing together a theoretical of like what is historical and intergenerational trauma. And I talked a lot about Dr. Joy DeGruy-Leary. I had just stumbled upon her work. Actually, her book is right here. It's always right here for me, because post-traumatic slave syndrome shifted the way that I saw my own trauma, right? And linked, I feel like she doesn't explicitly talk about ancestral trauma, but it's there. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a link, it's there. And so, but she does talk about a little bit of the intergenerational. And then I was put on to Dr. Maria Yellow Horse Braveheart, who I've been shouting at the top of the mountain. You probably heard of it through the Politicizing Your Practice series, Jesse. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Braveheart, she identifies that she's Lakota Indian. And that historical trauma and that disenfranchised, unresolved grief collectively, I mean, we're seeing it right now. We're feeling it, especially with the, right, the bodies, the remains being found of these, of our Indigenous youth in what is now known as Canada. More than ever, I feel like this is a reckoning. This is all very, very relevant. So at the time, there wasn't a lot of interest in 2010-11 in my dissertation, you know, and now I'm kind of kicking myself in the butt for like not publishing it sooner or something. I already have like a book or something under my belt, but it's a theoretical. And I break down everyone doing like intergenerational work or anyone I heard. I'm like Mims Higginbottom. Nobody hears about them. They didn't, it wasn't post-traumatic slave syndrome, but it's post-traumatic slavery disorder or something like that. Brothers from New York City. I believe they're all Black men identified, and we don't hear about them a lot, but they did a lot of work around that. There's a woman up in what is now known as Canada in the Ontario region that has an intergenerational trauma practice and works with Indigenous and First Nations people. So, you know, there's a lot of love, blood, sweat, and tears, and a lot of unworthiness. And then the second half of it is a program, you know, like a model program that was really modeled after the peer education group that I was a part of and that I was now facilitating.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a little bit about it.
Wow. Okay. I'm just thinking about some of the experiences that you named and finding, it sounds like somewhat of like a healing space and a political home in your undergrad through the institution of like higher education, and then contrasting that to the university and getting your doctorate and what that was like and having to fight for space there. I mean, we talk about it a lot in the podcast and just the ways in which those spaces tends to recruit people of color, but is ill-equipped to support our wellness in that space. I'm curious, like, what is your relationship to the university now or just higher education in general? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have. I was in a domestic violence relationship with the university for many years. And that's how I see it. And that's why I feel like the last 6 months I'm still healing, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I very feel it, much feel like it's a structural domestic violence relationship. Because I was there more times than I was anything else, right? More around my coworkers and colleagues than I was anyone else and my students. I don't know if I'm the best person because I've always been a critical lover, as I said, but I feel like same thing that we love to talk about diversity, right? We love to talk about having a diverse group and being culturally competent. And I take offense to it. Even when I was teaching multicultural counseling for grad students, counseling grad students, I would tell them, y'all, first day, this is not multicultural. And if you want that, you're going to have to go elsewhere. This is like social justice 505 for like, you know, therapists. And they'd like, therapy is not political. Wrong. And that's what I was getting. I started sweating and moving and drawing. And like a mad, you know, when you love something, like a mad scientist, I could talk about it forever. I'm sure all of us could, right? Like, you know, it'd be like, wrong, everything's political, bro. Did your mother have healthcare when you were born, right? Are you documented? Don't answer me. But, you know, like, you know, just going off, like, you know, do you have enough money to get home today? Did you have enough money to pay for parking? Or did you park 8 blocks away in the deep, deep, deep hood in order to get here today? Like, everything is political. Everything is political. And for us to say that the space that we hold for people and their pain and their trauma and their lineages is not political, or to just drop it in for one class in a whole 2-3 years or whatever it is not only offensive, it's fucking violent, in my opinion. Yeah. It's violent because what I would guess what majority of us have gone through, what we have seen, it deserves to be explored in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. No one is teaching us about how do we take care of ourselves energetically in our programs. No one is teaching us about boundaries, not just boundaries of like, don't say too much, but boundaries of like how they're fluid, Mm-hmm. They're not static. Is that the word? Like they're not just in one place. That healthy boundaries move and flow depending on the place, the space, the time where we're at, you know. I don't think that these higher eds, these organizations, these institutions deserve many of us or our money. I will be paying student loans for the rest of my life.
Yo.
If I have descendants, then they will be paid. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Like for the rest of my life, like I could have bought two houses somewhere, a house for people that needed to be housed in me, right? Like it's so sick and gross. And so I also despise, and this is for anyone out there listening, that especially within higher institution, like higher ed institutions, like at first I was like, I want to be a dean. I wanted this. I'm going to start out here in the counseling center. But I'm not shitting on anyone's dreams that wants to do this at all. Like no shit. But and when I realized who I needed to become, when I realized what parts of myself I would need to lose, when I realized that I really wouldn't be serving the youth or my people in order to do these things, and when I realized that I would have to swallow a lot of my fire and spirit and my organizing and change my diction and think about how I want to talk and enunciate in order to be in these positions, I realized it was like I was making a deal or selling part of my soul or spirit in a way that I wasn't going to be able to look in the mirror at night and look at some of my pod, my community, my collective the same way. And they realized it too. I would also say that, yes, we tried to organize hard and we did organize. I believe building relationship is essential in anywhere we go and do, right? And we were building relationship, building with unions. Mm-hmm. And they just burn you out and run you in circles.
Yo, it's just so much comes to mind with what you've just shared. One is Nicole Hannah-Jones, the creator of the 1619 Project, who's trying to get tenure at UNC Chapel Hill, got denied because of the gatekeepers there. And then there's been a ton of backlash and now they're trying to go forward and say, okay, you can get tenure. But I was just thinking about the gatekeepers that you had to experience while in higher ed. And I was kind of thinking about higher ed as an institution is a gatekeeper in and of itself, right? It's something that we're all told that we need in order to be quote unquote successful, whatever that means to you. And that there's, at least as a therapist, working in higher ed, there's a very niche space of being able to provide therapy, to provide some type of healing work. And I really want to, channel the work that you're doing of making it politicized for young people during their formative years who are trying to navigate these gatekeepers and these systems of power, because we want them to be well. We don't want them to drop out. And I was thinking about the burnout that happens as you navigate. I just read like yesterday that like only 3% of Black folks are wanting to like return to the office. And it was connected to this idea of like the code switching, the sacrificing of like their own identity of how they have to show up when they go into these spaces. And it's like, not worth it. But the burnout is so real. And I'm wondering, what do you do to sustain yourself or like just like take care of yourself as you navigate all of this?
Yeah. Yes to everything you just said. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. To be real, it switches and changes. I feel like I outgrow like self-care texts. And in general, for me, self-care is nothing without the community care, you know, and without having like, a few people to have my back where we can all say, you know what, we're going to cancel this meeting today. I'm not well today. You know, I'm not here. But for me, a therapist that is beyond a therapist, I don't know how else to call it. I don't think any of us have a name for whatever it is we're all creating in some way, shape, or form, you know, and I think we're co-creating and we don't even know it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if therapist fully fits the term that many of us are stepping into and creating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a therapist that also can hold my spiritual side and won't, pathologize, knowing things. I would say a therapist that is also somatic body working, because I feel that what happens with burnout, and I think I just want to say that I feel like burnout is really a reaction and a symptom of late stage capitalism and living in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I want to say that I think it's really important that we continue to balance and manage our nervous systems, because I think once you experience true burnout, it's almost like that rubber band has snapped. Like, I'm not just talking stress, but I'm saying burnout. Mm-hmm. That rubber band has snapped. And yeah, we can put it back together, but it's just, you know, it's we have to be careful at how far it stretches. And so for me, constantly looking at like my nervous system, am I in fight, flight, freeze? Am I shutting down? I overwork, Cap Moon. I overwork as a way to like function. So my sadness and depression will look agitated. My attention deficit symptoms increase. And so for me, breath work, literally. I said it for years. I've done breath work. And then my womb shaman is like, no, you haven't. Let's try it. I'm like, oh, snap. Okay. It's like really doing breath work. I have a team, not a team on call, but like I work with the womb shaman, because I'm not going to get into those personal things, but they're, you know, mothering and holding so much space for so many people, so many of our people for so long has affected my body and my womb, right? Mm. I'll say that. And I work, yeah, somatic therapist. I have my traditions, right? I practice, I'm a student in shamanism, in shaman tradition, African spirituality. I meditate, I walk. I sometimes do heavy lifting of weights, right? some days I'm just juicing and fasting, even though I hate it, because I need my mind and my body clear and pure. I'm not good at that, but it's really more about a mind thing for me, you know, and just trying to clear some icky stuff out. Not at all about a body thing, right? We're not fat phobic over here. And I would say the other thing I do is starting to let people in. I have a hard time with that. I think people feel close to me. I'm learning this, right? Like people feel connected because I'm, you know, I think I love all folks and I do, but when it gets too close to like seeing really me, mm-hmm. I have a tendency to like, right? Like I'll put it up. And I think a lot of us do, and it's protective.
That's why we became therapists.
Right.
So we could just hold everyone else's shit.
That's right.
a smooth pivot, just like me. Oh no, but how didn't are you say feeling? You had an issue with your mom? Let's talk about that.
There's a finesse. Yes, Logan. Yes. Yeah. So I'm learning that, and I'm learning how it's also affected some relationships and friendships that wanted to grow. Mm. I'm learning to start to date again. I was in a relationship for 18 years. I was married for 18 years. So for the last like seven, I've dated, I've done my thing, whatever. But you know, I've really like focused on Jen as a person. Mm. And I really, that Phoenix rising from the ashes shit, like it sounds cute, but it's not, as we know. So I really have gone through another death, literally. Mm. And my community came together. My dear sister friend in Toronto area held space for me virtually. And so things like that will need to happen, right? Where I'll bring in people from all areas of my life to hold space for me. And that was one of the hardest things I've ever done, down to my mom coming into the space virtually, because I was struggling. Because I was struggling mm-hmm. that bad. And so... yeah, I didn't really like want to be around and didn't realize that I was also like, I guess I channel for the collective, meaning that I can feel what is going on collectively, even if it's not mine, I think it is. And mm-hmm. so I think I was experiencing, and I never experienced it before, like everyone's mass anxiety, everyone's grief, like this collective societal. And I kept saying everything is breaking. The structures are breaking, like everything. We are currently decolonizing, like we're starting internally. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where I reside, right? When I mean the decolonization piece, it's never metaphorical. I just want to say that, but it is also about that personal sovereignty, you know, like before we shift and dismantle these structures, we all still need to get some level of liberation internally.
Yes.
Right? So like if we're not clearing out what we have been conditioned to believe and think and do, what is success? What is money? What is this? Right? What is a relationship? What is a relationship? What is monogamy? What is healthy? What is, you know, if we're not undoing all of that, then we're going to create more of what mm-hmm. doesn't really serve us. So I believe my area is around emotional decolonization, but you can't mm-hmm. put that in an Instagram handle, you know?
Yo, I mean, you're talking about the IG, and I just appreciate you naming and just exclaiming that everything is political, you know. And I think this is the shit that we're constantly fighting for these institutions to acknowledge what feels just to just be known in our soul, because we know it the way that we navigate the world, but just for other people to acknowledge that. So I appreciate you centering that and all the work that you do. What was it that brought you to like decolonizing therapy? And then how did the IG get started?
So let's see, I kicked and screamed. My students, my peer educators, we're family now, right? They're like my family. That's another thing that we decolonized and worked on, that we did group together at the university, and it wasn't mm-hmm. group therapy, but it was group nevertheless. And forming relationships with them where I let them into my life, you know, where I'm showing up at their, you know, cookouts, their graduations, and, you know, letting each other in. And so I want to say that was part of breaking down some of those barriers and lines, and like, this is what a boundary is. Mm-hmm. So we were at a retreat, and it was a particularly intense one. And we realized that we lost funding, which is one of the reasons I left the university, because they were going to choose not to support us anymore, even though we'd saved thousands of students, first generation inner city, some of them not documented, you know, lives. And, you know, we were running out of, we had no more grant funding, and the university wasn't going to support that. And we were sitting at a retreat talking about what we're going to do. And I had never been paid for it. Regardless, I got paid for my role at the university, but not PEP. And my students were like, we created a page for you. And they're like, Jen, this place is killing you, you know? Mm. And it makes me emotional, because my babies were like surrounding me and like, you're always asking us what we need. What do you need to live your best life? What do you need to be in a healthy relationship and partnership that is going to hold you? You can't just be taking care of us all the time. We're going to leave. We're going to graduate. Like, Jen, like, who nurtures you? And I'm like, mm-hmm. I got friends. I got people. What do you mean? What are you talking about? Right? Like, our defensiveness comes up, right? But when I think about it, they were calling me in and out, but at the same time, you know, they were loving on me. And so they, decolonizing therapy is a mixture. It's an amalgam of all of the activism, the work, the psychology, and my love of psychology. Like, there's a lot of things I'm not good at. I'm a fucking amazing therapist. I'm sure each of you can say that, right? Like I'm not great at balancing my books. I'm not great at riding a bicycle, but I'm a fucking great therapist, especially group. And it was like, I can't imagine myself do anything other than hold space, you know, for tough conversations. And the realization with the decolonizing therapy was that A, everything was political, but B, the mental health system was a system, and it was serving this larger system of white supremacy, and leading to more deaths and inflammation and environmental racism, ecocide in our environment, right? Like, realizing that, you know, as I said, babies are in the river. Why are they in the river? And we're used to doing our jobs, but do we ever stop to go down and be like, how are we gonna look down the river and dismantle this? Like, why are there so many of our kids dying? So it was all of that coming together. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to decide, like, there's a lot of areas like coming and converging together, yeah. But mostly it was my professional, physical, emotional health all in one, and realizing that I was dying, mm-hmm. Maybe not literally, but emotionally, you know, like my fire was out. I didn't, I feel like I was an okay therapist probably for a year and a half. Like I'm keeping it real, you know, like I didn't have that fire, that energy. Yeah. It like had been siphoned from me. We had a wait list of over 100 students with 4 counselors for the university.
Damn.
And students wanted therapy, right? We were skipping lunches, skipping admin time. So you all know how this is. We're not alone in it. You know, like, I know you're all are not nodding, because it's like, we hear this over and over and over. We've mm-hmm. exploited. That's why I said I'm coming out of a domestic violence relationship. And thinking it's not me, that I'm not working hard enough, good enough. Your notes aren't in, right? Like gaslighting, like it's you. There's something you should be doing differently. You're too much of a free spirit. You're doing too much LGBT support group. Just focus on the one-to-one sessions, right? And so eventually my students were like, here's your Instagram. The world needs this. Mm. You're going to do this. Yeah. And so that's the like technical, but it was an accident, to be honest with you. Like it was just an amalgam of everything I've done and I've learned throughout the years. And I thought if 4, 5, 10, 15 people followed me, I was just like, you know, just like somebody else agrees or somebody else, like, I'm not alone in this, you know, because they would hear me talk about it. My colleagues would, but they were still in that box hard, like, you know, correcting me on an email. Oh, no. Well, Jennifer, you know, like still following these very white supremacist internalized racism ways, mm-hmm. even if they were people of color, like, you know, it was hard. And so, yeah, I think decolonizing therapy was really love letters to myself. Mm. And then I guess 20 people followed, and then 400 people followed. And then when 1,000 people followed, like we went out for drinks and we were like, this is cute, but this isn't what I'm doing. Like I'm not doing this, right? Like, you know, and I don't know. It just like, it's just snowballed. Yeah. All it really has been is like me speaking my truth. I do not post regularly, if you notice. All right, I post when I want to, when I feel moved to, when spirit tells me to. Mm-hmm. Half of it, I don't remember writing. Honestly, yeah. And honestly, the world telling us that they needed more of it has made me feel very grateful, has made me realize like I'm looking to people way younger than me with more energy than me to like, do it, take it up, do it. I'm like, wait, I'm writing more. I'm in the middle of writing a book.
Hey.
So there's deadlines on deadlines, if you feel me on that. I don't really have an answer. I think decolonizing therapy, I just want to say, is like born in me and is born in my process of unfucking and undoing myself, decolonizing myself, right? Like slowly, quietly, privately, getting called out in spaces, getting called in spaces, being loved on it, all of it, like the good, the bad, the ugly, looking at my light-skinnedness, looking at the colorism that shows up, looking at who I need to make space for, learning to love my bigger body, learning to, like all of it has been a process and I'm not done. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to say. It's a marathon, as Nipsey Hussle would say. Like it is not, right? It's not a one-stop shop. There is no workshop that is going to tie that bow up.
Right.
I'm sorry. I don't have like a really pretty answer, but it's, you know, decolonizing therapy was formed from my pain and the pain of some of the people that I've served, and realizing that like, if it ain't trauma informed for all of us, then it ain't trauma informed, you know, just white skinny people that are, you know, thinking about relationships. Not that it's not important. But that's what most of us got trained on.
Right.
Most of us got trained on, you know, focusing on relationships, CBT. And I think CBT is one of the whitest shits ever. Like, I think that, right, like cognitive behavior. I feel like you did a post on it too, Marvin. I'm not sure. Maybe not. But like, CBT, please do. You haven't. But like, yeah, I think CBT is all about like, check your mind. And don't get me wrong, cognitive distortions are hella useful when you're talking to people. And I use it all the time with college students. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this is black and white thinking, bro. Let's look at this list. This, right? All the time. And it just continues to put the onus on the person.
Yes.
Without ever looking at external circumstances. That's what I mean. So it doesn't mean that we're going to throw it all out, right? It's just saying that it's incomplete.
Right.
Therapy as it stands and how it's being taught, in my humble opinion, if anyone cares, is incomplete. And that's what I mean.
Definitely. Yeah.
I think that's it kind of speaks to like therapy and how it, like in its origin, right? Like, you can tell this shit was created by white men. Right? Like, because we're not thinking about hardships. We're not thinking about, you know, how, you know, a person's skin color or identity or economic status, socioeconomic background. Like, we're not thinking about those a lot of the time. We're thinking about, oh no, you are, there's something wrong with you. Let's fix you. Mm-hmm. And like, I think when you speak to the IG and how it grew so quickly, and I think similarly for us, it's like, we see what's happening, but it's almost like, you know, if you're in a space with all white people and then some like wild shit happens, but it's normal for white people, and the black people or people of color looking at each other like, you see that shit? And I think we are naming that shit.
Yes.
Right? Like, we are naming it and we're saying like, hey, this is actually wrong. Like, I know this isn't a book, but this shit don't work for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it's like all of those folks of color and folks that have marginalized identities are feeling so heard and so seen by mm-hmm. the things that we post. Cause it's like, cause we feel like we're like losing it because it's just like, yeah. this doesn't work. Or like, yeah. Is something wrong with me? Cause I don't see it. But now it's just like, oh no, we are now together and we now see each other and we're all like, oh no, it's just fucked up.
Yeah.
And there's something super comforting about that because we really think that just like, am I alone? Is there something wrong with me? That imposter syndrome creeps in. And so, you know, I appreciate, you know, the babies that you had, you know, gathering you and, and you, you know, maintaining this IG and this presence.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah. That, yeah, you know, as you're talking, I'm also thinking, you know, quick story. I was getting my master's at NYU and it was on the weekend, right? And so I was working full time at a partial care program, going to school on the weekend. The shit we do, right? Like at certain ages, like I could never do that now. I'd be on the floor. Mm-hmm. Never. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling like I was breathing through, right? Like, wait, I feel like I know this. I feel like a lot of us as folks of color or marginalized people, like we've picked it up, our hypervigilance, right? Like our way of just like knowing how to code switch, knowing how to engage with people. Doesn't mean we want to do the physical work in school. I'm not talking about the grades, but I'm saying like internally, I felt like the theories felt like, this isn't it. I know it and I have to take it for the test, but this ain't it, like you're saying, Marvin, like it ain't it, you know? And I know how I want to engage with my people. Will I be allowed? Will I have a supervisor for it? Like, how's that going to be? And I remember having a professor, I don't know, I think I had came in from partying the night before, mind you, I was like 26, 25, whatever it was, 24. And I switched, I had clothes in my bag, I was smart enough. And I was talking to some of my friends and I probably was crap talking a little bit or saying what I was doing or wherever I was or whatever I was partying. And I guess our teacher came in. So I finished up my conversation and we had class. And midway through, he asked a question. I answered it. And then he said, you know, Jennifer, in front of everyone, you're so articulate. And yes, he was a white gay man.
Ooh.
And he said, you're so articulate and you write beautifully. Every so often, if I may, and he didn't wait for my response, this boys in the hood comes out of you.
Oh no.
Wait, say that. What? Say that again.
Every so often, this boys in the hood comes out of you.
Oh, bruh.
And at the time, I don't think I even realized how bad, you know, because no one else reacted.
Yeah.
Right? I got small, which is what, and people wouldn't believe it, but I just shut down. I was like, okay, you know, like I wanted to cry. I wanted to throw up. Mm. Like I knew something. Now I'm like, okay, that was a micro assault, right? Like and 3 years ago, I wrote him a letter kind of telling him lovingly about himself and forgiving him at the same time. Like it was work that I needed to do for myself, but, that always stays with me, you know, but that always stays with me. And then I realized that that's part of mine and other superpowers, right? That's part of what makes me badass. Right? Is that I lived it, I grew up in it, I own it, I love it, and I'm not gonna lose part of who I am in order to satisfy this very Eurocentric, Caucasian institution and these structures. I'm not gonna drop my realness. And I believe I'm inviting others in to be their full, unbridled, unapologetic, all of itself, messy, raw, uncomfortable, whatever it is, like bring it. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to share that because I feel like that's part of decolonizing therapy too, you know, is not just dismantling, but it's also the joy and the full love and the liberation of who we are.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
The university can only get away with this bullshit for so long. Like they is coming home to roost, y'all. Like, I mean, like what has given me so much inspiration is in our process of like doing lectures and guest speaking and connecting with folks that are starting their master's program. I mean, like you spoke to it too, Jennifer, like this generation of folks are just lit as fuck. You know, like they're just so much farther ahead of where I was at 22, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so like they're coming into grad school for their master's with this framework of wanting to decolonize the work. And so it's only going to be so long before the institution is like of higher education is just like, it doesn't serve anything anymore, you know? And so I'm just curious for you, what is it like, you know, being in this space of radical education and being someone who is pushing forward the field and the narrative of like decolonizing therapy. Do you ever worry about it? Like, I think about some of the things that have been out in the world, like the ways in which people have co-opted the narrative around like restorative justice or transformative justice, and anglicized the shit out of it. Is there a fear that maybe it gets diluted to be this just buzzword? And how do we represent the spirit of what it truly is without like kind of conforming to the expectations of the institution in and of itself? How do we not, you know, resist the urge to be like, oh, this needs to be evidence-based practice or whatever the fuck, you know, like.
Right. You know, Jesse, I wish I had a very beautiful answer to that. Because shit, you know, I feel like every day I'm like, you know, I was like on a melanin and mental health or inclusive therapist, like trying to find a friend that was struggling, which matched them up with a therapist, you know, mm-hmm. And shout out to all of these amazing search engines that are doing this for so many of us, right? Like so many of us just had to go with whoever was there, no matter who they were, right? So shout out to that. And I looked on this man's page and it said decolonized therapist or something. And I would just like, I had a little reaction. Not, it wasn't about me or you know, decolonizing. It was more like, who are you accountable to? Like right. That was the thought. Like, what do you, I don't know this person. I don't have a, I mean, I don't know. Right. And I don't want to say put what they want to, but I feel like it's already being misunderstood and co-opted. You know, when I speak of decolonization, it's global. Right? We forget, always honoring, right, that we're on this land and some of us and our ancestors were forcibly brought to this land, right? We're settlers, but we were forcibly brought to this land or had no choice. And there was a forced migration process from various countries, places, and spaces. But nevertheless, we always want to honor the indigenous folks and people of North America, but they're indigenous people to Africa, right? To Australia, to, you know, to all the islands, you know, to Grenada, to Panama, to, you know, Peru. And so when I talk about decolonizing and I had to really check in with my organizing crew before I, before I went with it, you know, I'm not just talking about North America indigenous. We're talking about all the way across, right? The globe. And so I say this to say, that A, you know, I feel like sometimes there's a lot of like that splitting, you know how that is in group work? Like, like there's a misunderstanding rather than asking, there's a misunderstanding of how things are utilized and co-opted. Decolonizing is not the same as social justice. Social justice is important, right? But it's not, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not diversity, inclusion, whatever it is, equity work. It's not that, right? And we accidentally slip in there sometimes because people don't know what they're getting, but that's fine. And I want to say like, I have had opportunities, like me and Anissa have had opportunities, my people, cause you know, I'm supported by people, you know, whether it's an event or, you know what I'm saying? So, but it's really only me and my admin assistant. Like, it's just, that's it. Like I do everything. It's amazing how we do it and how we make it work. And we were asked to sort of do this like a CEU thing, mm-hmm. and like curriculum and I'll be honest, I was like, oh, I don't. And I've chosen not to go that route. You know, I've chosen not to, I don't even know what the word is, like establish it within the institutions. You know, I could see the benefits. I understand, like, in getting CEUs, more people would be inclined to maybe take our series or whatever. Mm-hmm. But deep down, there's a part of me that's like, don't sell out.
Right.
Yeah, there's like a little, there's like my people, like, no, like this, right. This is the crossroads that everybody's had to look at and go down. Right. Mm. And you can do it this way. But you've already like given off so many of your soul the last whatever many years. You've done it their way. Right. You have student loans to prove it. Right. And so I don't know what that's going to look like, y'all. Mm. Like, I don't. And if anyone has ideas, great. You know, I know that I'm involved in work around abolition and looking at what that looks like around structures that are now known as therapy and mm-hmm. psychology, and not to like completely dismantle it, but to, you know, to undo it and the systemic dis-ease within it and the illness within it. But I, to be honest with you, I don't know, I'm interested to hear what y'all think, right? You know, I struggle with it. I struggle with it because I mean, and it's still there, you know, like my support coach, anti-capitalist person is there. And she's just like, you can do it. And a bunch of therapists, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists will sign up and you'll make a shit ton of money. And yeah, you can give a shit ton back to the world. I'm being real here, right? Like, I could give a whole back to the world. You can do it, but then it falls in a box, in a mm-hmm. structure. Mm-hmm. And so I have not done that. And I think that's probably why I've taken a lot of time and been very cautious of what kind of offerings that I provide.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be co-opted and for it to be taken advantage of, but I see it happen already. It's already happening. Right.
That is the question. I think when you're working in higher ed and you have a practice, you have an offering, and it's, I've been thinking about this since actually we were talking shop with Erica Hart, and Erica, you know, planted the idea, like, if you know what you're talking about, like, you could teach under a tree and have people gather and do it there. Right. So I'm like, I've just been sitting with that for a few weeks now. Like, damn, you know, Erica's absolutely right. Like, I could do this work and connect with people, but there's still this relationship to like wanting to like live well. And, mm-hmm. I've been trying to think differently about it for a while. So I'm right with you. I'm like, damn, how do we do this and reach the masses and not have to necessarily go through the avenue of the institution? And I'm right there with you. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, I appreciate that we are in community with you. Cause I think we're like-minded thinkers in that way. And we're going through this process of trying to figure out like, how do we get information out, right? Like, we've had a lot of time to think things through. We've observed a lot of things and we want to be radical educators for the world and not sell out. And there's not a roadmap for that. Like, it's something that we constantly have to be in reflection of, because as you know, like, the shit is there, the internalized capitalism is there. And we constantly have to check each other and just be like, when are we getting pulled into that? Yes. You know? And like, I appreciate like Dr. Joy DeGruy so much, just, you know, for the work that she does, because she out here getting the bag. Like, I know she is. She cutting the check. And I know she comes to Oakland and does free workshops multiple times a year for people in Deep East Oakland. And so it's like the balance that she's still trying to hold to stay rooted in community. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't think, you know, unfortunately, I don't think there's going to be an answer for like, how do we do this? How do we bring this offering to the world? And there's some things that I don't even know if there will be language for. Like, there are just some things that we may not be able to write down as a way of communicating, and that some, you just have to feel the shit in your soul, in your spirit. And that's the best we can do. That's the best I can give you. You're not going to be able to put that in a book.
I feel like too, it's like the amount of work it's going to take to unlearn a lot of the shit that we've learned and just all like the, just the white supremacy that is so, so, so deeply rooted in all of us. Is that, and create something new. It's going to be messy. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to be messy. We're going to get it wrong. Yes. And that's why I think that idea of community is so important. Like it's mm-hmm. so incredible. I was just called in very recently on Instagram and I very much appreciated it. For folks that don't know, check the Instagram. but I also think we have to be, to have a mindset that's yeah. that's open enough to listen to other people say like, here's why this is a problem, or here's why this is mm-hmm. not, you know, why we want to use this language or practice in this way. I think we just have to be open and just not, we can't, I think we have to be, oh God, I don't want to say this because city, when I did city year, they said this, but we have to be like water. Mm. Like we have to be like we have to just be able to go with the flow, move and just like see what feels right.
Bro, that's co-opted too. They took that from Bruce Lee.
That's right.
City are probably still everything. But and also Michael, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, what would it like, who has told us that we have to go to an institution and be licensed to be a therapist? Like, what mm-hmm. if we created the fucking radical therapy school and yeah. we had our own license? Yeah. And it didn't cost that much, or much. Maybe it was free. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just right? a field with a bunch of trees.
And yeah. we have our own damn website.
I got allergies.
We got a therapist like that. Right. Like, what would that like? And we don't even have to use, you know, any of these institutions. We can just create our own shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And give credence to that. Right. Give credence yeah. to, oh, you yeah. got it from the radical therapy. Okay, cool. That's like, I know that's top tier. I know y'all are talking game. So. Yep. That's yeah. who I want to be. That's who I want to meet with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's where it's, I just want to say that, Marvin, that's even for me, like the people that I know, whether in a spiritual way or a very social work, psychology, helping professional way, some of them are going off into their own school, like making schools, you know, maybe mm-hmm. inline ones and what have you, but I would love to have like a brick and mortar school. Like, as you said it, I just had a moment of like, maybe all of yeah. us, even if we have different terminology for it, but I know like one person, I think their handle, I'm getting to know them, is like social work and kiss my ass. And then shout out to Gabe Torres and Jing Yoon in Canada that are doing a lot of abolition work around psychology and therapy. And like, there's so many of us, right? Sonali, like there's just so many of us that have this frame. And we might not have the same exact wording, which is fine, which is, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But imagine it's going to happen, right? Yeah. Okay. We're going to manifest it right here and now. We can
spoken to existence. That's it.
Like create this like beautiful educational school, and we can all have the space to do our own thing.
Yeah.
Right. Because we would be visiting whatever yeah. professor, whatever the hell they want to call it. Yeah. But I would also love to see, and I'm keeping it real. I would also love to see energy work and energetic boundaries be taught. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would like for there to be space for people that are hella agnostic atheists, and that there'd be room for that, as mm-hmm. well as people that receive information in different ways, right? Because I think mm-hmm. part of why, you know, I was in trouble all the time as a kid and talking too much and out of my seat and like that ADHD, you know, diagnosis, was because I was receiving other information and I didn't know what to do with it all in my body. Like I mm-hmm. didn't know how to process it, right? Certain fabrics bother me, certain sounds, like we're sensitive, some of us. And mm-hmm. I think I would love to see our school be, right. all of our school be a re-education. And I think that that's part of what decolonization is. It's a re-education and a returning mm-hmm. home. With a capital H, not just to the land, but returning home to who the fuck am I really? If I let down some of these masks that are societally acceptable, that are keeping me alive this long, keeping me out of prison, keeping me whatever, right? Like keeping me with this job, who would I be? Mm. And to be honest with you, and going back to that question, I believe this work is going to speak for itself. Mm-hmm. I think that it has been around and has sustained so long because I am keeping true to my ancestral roots and my community always and myself. And I think that the more that I've stopped apologizing and hiding parts of myself, the more that this work has just like come front and center, if that makes sense. So, I think that one, I just have to trust. That's all I'm doing lately. And some, you know, people will tell me that's a little bit presumptuous, but I just trust that they can co-opt all they want. I already see research coming out, right? Like decolonizing this. And I'm just like, whoosa, or, you know, I've had to have a few conversations with people like, that's a little too close to what I'm saying right now. And like, where did you, you know, on the DL, I'm not trying to, I don't need to like cancel folks right away or, you know, have conversations. And we build relationship together when I've had to gently call people in, you know, but I do believe this work speaks for itself. Yeah. I believe, and that's why I love getting on podcasts occasionally, because it helps me remember who I am and my roots. Cause your questions were amazing, y'all. And it also reminds me that we're in this like interlocking colonial system still that keeps feeding. It's like, it's just hungry. It's never going to stop. It's never going to stop eating us until we all are like, boop. So I feel like part one of this work is deconstruction. And that's what I've been talking about, right? Like deconstruction, like the decolonizing deconstruction. But then like part two, right, is like the restructuring, the reconstruction of it all, right? And sort of like this cultural analysis of our community, of our understanding of who we are and what we do. And so I definitely think that more accountability partners is going to be a thing in the future. I think that what Oakland is doing, like, what is it called? Mental health first aid, or folks are going out when there's a call for someone having a mental health crisis. Dr. Frederick Hinkling was doing that out of Jamaica for years. No one talked about it. I found out. And if y'all don't know, please look up the late brother, Dr. Frederick Hinkling. He is a Jamaican psychiatrist. I found out when I was doing a presentation series for Cayman Islands Psychological Association about him. Nice. I had no idea. He passed away in May of 2020. Dr. Hinkling was working at Bellevue Hospital in Jamaica. And he created like a mental health team, and they watched like intake and recidivism rates go down like 50% while he was there. He has a book that's coming out. It's a little bit pricey, but I'm sure his people are pushing it through. But I don't know. I feel like it's our job to uplift the scholars and the people across the world that are not pointed out and remembered, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it ain't Freud, it ain't Jung, it ain't Margaret Mahler and Melanie Klein or whoever else. And not that object relations isn't important, or internal family systems, you know, like, I'm not saying this stuff doesn't have a place. I'm just saying it's incomplete.
Yeah.
Definitely. Absolutely. It ain't universal.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just have a white person buy us the book too. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I'm so excited about the idea that the world is opening again, that the possibility that we could have all these dope, radical healers and thinkers and educators and weavers, that we could all just be in one place and think this through in person and build something. You know what I mean? Because that's it, right? Like, folks often misinterpret the movement and the work as if it's something destructive, but it's building something. It's building something new outside of what has already existed there, right? And decolonizing therapy and melanated social work, it's about building something outside of the institution that is further continuing the legacy of white supremacy. We want to do something different, y'all. So if you got it in your psychology today, if you wrote decolonizing therapy in there, it better be rooted in indigenous sovereignty across this globe. It better be rooted in abolishing prisons, ending environmental racism, Palestinian liberation. It's got to be rooted in all of these struggles, y'all. And some of these folks, even when they come invite us to talk, they ain't ready for that ism. They ain't ready for that real spit, y'all.
They don't be ready.
Yeah. So make sure when you come and you ask them for the decolonizing therapy, you really with it. You know what's up. But yeah, Jennifer, speak to the people, let them know, how do they get in contact with you? And like, what are the offerings that you have right now? Because I said it, I cannot speak highly enough. I feel like everyone needs to have Dr. Jennifer Mullen come in, and you need to suck up this game right now, for real, for real.
Thank you, Jesse. Yeah. Thank you for the vote of confidence. The little girl in me wants to be like, no, I want to shrink. you could easily find me at on Instagram at Decolonizing Therapy, on our website, drjennifermullen.com. I'm on Twitter, but not as consistently, Dr. Jenny Jen. My offerings, I offer an intensive workshop on ancestral rage or sacred rage. And I break down how rage has disguises. It doesn't just look like, oh, Incredible Hulk, that there's six disguises of rage, one of them being devotion, distraction, defiance, and that those are ways that help us survive, particularly for Black, Indigenous people of color. And there is also a bit of a spiritual sense there, as we talk a little bit about ancestry and how rage is the love child of shame and trauma, ancestral shame and trauma. And my other offering that will be dropping actually on Monday is a pre-recorded Politicizing Your Practice 3-part series. You will be able to find that on Monday at www.politicizingyourpractice.com. We're working on a website to put all of that there. Everything is happening at once. And if you want an intensive along with those 3 pre-recorded workshops, you just reach out to us, fill out a form, and then we will get back to you. So yeah, that's what I'm offering right now. Oh, and look out for my book. It's not titled yet, but probably related to decolonizing therapy and politicizing your practice. And that will be out next year in 2022, out of Norton.
Okay, I'm gonna be eagerly waiting for that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so y'all heard it. Make sure you tap in. And as always, we appreciate y'all for listening. Continue to follow us at Melanated Social Work. Check out our website, www.melanatedsocialwork.com. And if you feel so inclined, donate. Hit the Venmo, hit the Cash App, and throw some funds our way, because we'd love to continue doing this work. But yeah, such a huge honor. Thank you so much, Jennifer. It was amazing. We appreciate you so much.
Appreciate y'all. Thank you so much.
All right, y'all. Peace.
Peace.